Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Bava Metzia, daf Nun Zayin. We're holding at the top of Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, three lines from the top, Amar Rava. The Gemara today on Amud Aleph is going to continue discussing the previous Mishnah, which had listed a bunch of things which are not subject to Onah. They're not subject to overcharging. And the Gemara is going to explain exactly what that means for each of these different contexts. And then the Gemara in Amud Beis is going to continue on with some of the laws that were taught in the Mishnah, that in addition to not being subject to overcharging to Onah, many of the items listed in the Mishnah are not subject to other laws, whether that be the laws of paying back double for theft, paying four times or five times in the event of an ox or a sheep which was stolen and then was slaughtered, and other dinim, other laws which apply to all of these items. So the Gemara is going to elucidate how exactly we know that these items are not subject to those laws. So let's pick up at the top of Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, Amar Rava. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Chasa, Boi Rabbi Ami. Rava reported in the name of Rav Chasa that Rabbi Ami posed the following question in the Beis Medrash. Asked Rabbi Ami, Ona ein lahem, all these items that were listed in the Mishnah are not subject to overcharging, but bitul mekach yesh lahem, o ein lahem. Let's say a person were to overcharge for the items listed in the Mishnah by more than a sixth. So in a general transaction, we would assume that if you overcharge by more than a sixth, then the entire transaction is null and void. So these items which are not subject to overcharging, and presumably if you charged exactly a sixth extra, they would not be subject to the normal laws of overcharging. What happens if you overcharge by more than a sixth? Will we say that the entire transaction is null and void, just like the normal rules? Or would we say that since these items are not subject to overcharging, even when you overcharge by more than a sixth, the transaction will not be null and void? So that was Rabbi Ami's question. So Amar Rav Nachman, says Rav Nachman, Hadar Amar Rav Chasa, after Rav Chasa reported that Rabbi Ami asked this question in the Beis Medrash, Rav Chasa then said that Pashit Rabbi Ami seemingly answered his own question and said, Ona ein lahem bitul mekach yesh lahem. Rabbi Ami answered his question and said that although these items are not subject to overcharging when you charge by exactly a sixth extra, when you overcharge by more than a sixth, then they do have bitul mekach. We do assume the transaction is null and void. So Rabbi Ami had this major question, but he was able to answer it and to conclude that the items listed in the Mishnah are not subject, are subject to overcharging by more than a sixth, and the transaction will be null and void. Now, in a similar vein, Rabbi Yonah and Rabbi Yirmiyah have a similar discussion, again, related to these items in the Mishnah. The Gemara, Rashi points out, is going on to a new discussion, not related to this previous question of Rabbi Ami, but certainly along the same lines. If you look in Rashi, Dibra Machil, Rabbi Yonah, the Rabbi Yirmiyah, he says, Milta ba'ape nafshayhu amri. They were saying a new statement, Velava de Rabbi Ami kaimi. And they were not going on the previous question posed by Rabbi Ami. So what did Rabbi Yonah and Rabbi Yirmiyah say? Rabbi Yonah amar ahekdeshos. Rabbi Yonah specified that he was talking about hekdeshos. He was talking about consecrated property, which was discussed in the Mishnah. And Rabbi Yirmiyah amar akarkos. Rabbi Yirmiyah said that he was discussing land, which was also mentioned in the Mishnah. V'tarbayu mishmei Rabbi Yochanan amru. They both reported slightly differently in the name of Rabbi Yochanan the following statement, that ona ein lahem bitul mekach yesh lahen, that the items that they were discussing respectively, Rabbi Yonah on consecrated property and Rabbi Yirmiyah about land, they reported in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that although these items are not subject to overcharging, as was stated in the Mishnah, they are subject to the transaction being null and void. So says the Gemara, Manda Amar Ahekdeshos, the opinion who says that Rabbi Yochanan made this statement, that if you overcharge by more than a sixth, the transaction would be null and void, if you assume that that statement was made about consecrated property, like Rabbi Yonah, then kol shekein akarkos. By logical inference, that should be all the more so true when it comes to the sale of land. And as Rashi essentially points out, that if you assume, if you overcharge by more than a sixth, the whole transaction is null and void on consecrated property, then all the more so that's going to be true when dealing with another person. That if your transaction with hekdesh, which generally is not subject to the normal laws of transactions, if even such a transaction is regulated by this principle, where if you overcharge by more than a sixth, the whole transaction will be void, then that's certainly going to be true when it comes to transactions involving land. So that's how we would understand Rabbi Yonah, who reported that Rabbi Yochanan made this statement about consecrated property. It's also going to apply to land. But Manda Amar Akarkos, the position who holds that Rabbi Yochanan made this statement about land, which again is Rabbi Yirmiyah's position, then we would say that that's limited to land. Aval Ahekdeshos lo. But that same principle would not apply to consecrated property. And how do we know that? That's going to be Kiddush Shmuel, based on the following statement of Shmuel. De'amar Shmuel, because Shmuel told us that Hekdesh Shaveh Mane, Shechilah Lo'av Shaveh Pruta, Mechulah. Says Shmuel, if you have a consecrated item with it, which is worth a mane, which is worth a large sum of money, and you redeem it onto something which only has a pruta of value, something far less valuable, still we assume that it's mechulal. Still we assume that the consecrated item that was very expensive that you redeemed is considered redeemed, even though you're transferring its sanctity from an item of far greater value to an item of far lesser value. So what we see from Shmuel is that when it comes to redeeming consecrated property, the value doesn't have to line up exactly, that essentially consecrated property is not subject to onah, is not subject to the regular laws of overcharging. And thus, it can work out, according to Rabbi Yirmiyah, that even though land will be subject to becoming null and void when you overcharge by more than a sixth, consecrated property will not have that same law. So that's the discussion that Rabbi Yonah and Rabbi Yirmiyah reported in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Now, based on that discussion, the Gemara is going to pose some questions, primarily to Rabbi Yonah, based on other statements that it seems Rabbi Yochanan made. So says the Gemara, quoting a Mishnah from Masechta Tmura, that's Tnan Hasam. We have the following Mishnah in Tmura. Let's just see in Rashi, he quotes the beginning of the Mishnah, which I think will be helpful for understanding the continuation. If you look in the Rashi, Dibramachalim Haya Kodesh Balmum, it's about 2/3 of the way down on the page. Says Rashi, Resha de Masnisin Hachi. This is the beginning of the Mishnah, which the Gemara doesn't quote for you, but I'll fill in, says Rashi. Haomer Harezu Tachadzu. Let's say a person has a consecrated animal, and they say that I'm going to substitute out the animal that I have for a different animal, or zu tmurazu, or zu chilufezu, different languages that all essentially mean substitution. Hare zu tmura. That's considered improper substitution of a holy animal. We know the Torah tells us that if you have a holy animal, then lo yachalifenu velo yamiro tov bira ura betov, you're not supposed to switch out the animals that you made consecrated for other animals, even if you're going to increase the niceness, the quality of the animal. Let's say you have a bad animal, which is consecrated, and you want to change it out for a nicer animal. You're not supposed to do that. So the Mishnah tells us that if you use any of these languages, you have affected an improper substitution of the animal. Now, zu mechuleles hazu, if you say that the holy animal that you have is going to be redeemed onto a different animal, lo amar klum, then you haven't said anything. She'ein korban tamim mischalel. That statement is not considered to be significant because we assume that an animal which is unblemished, which is completely in its natural state and doesn't have any flaw to it, cannot be redeemed, cannot be deconsecrated onto another animal. So if you make any of the first statements in the Mishnah, that would work to affect the improper substitution, which you're not supposed to do. But if you try to redeem the animal, which doesn't have a blemish, then that substitution would not work. Then says the Mishnah, Ve'im haya kodesh balmum, so Rashi is continuing on, but now we're ready to go back into the Gemara, where this continuation of the Mishnah is quoted. So back in the Gemara says, Tanan Hasam, we have this Mishnah which we've been referencing in Tmura, Im haya kodesh balmum, yatza l'chulin, v'tzarech lasos lodamim. Let's say a person makes this statement where they're trying to substitute the animal one for another and deconsecrate the holy animal. If the holy animal has a blemish, if it has some sort of flaw, then when you make this statement that you're redeeming it, we do assume that that animal goes out lechulin, it becomes deconsecrated, v'tzarech la'asos lo damim, and you have to fill in the value of the consecrated animal, which you removed from the animal, to make up for the change in value. So there we can jump back to Rashi, where Rashi now explains that last part of the Mishnah, the middle of that Rashi that we were just reading, Im haya kodesh balmum. Ve'im haya kodesh balmum, yatza lechulin v'tzarech lasos lo damin. If the holy animal had a flaw, then when you make this statement that you're redeeming it, it does become deconsecrated, and you have to fill in the value. So what does that mean, says Rashi? Im ein zu shelchulin yafe kishel hektish, if the new animal, which was not consecrated, which you're substituting for the animal that was previously consecrated, if this new animal is not worth as much as the holy animal, then mosif alei ma'osav ad kedeid mehektish. You have to add value onto the animal. You have to pay back the funds of hektish, the holy funds that you have deviated, misappropriated from the previous animal to the new animal, in order to fill in the value. So that sort of makes it seem like hektish, like consecrated property, is subject to the laws of overcharging, because you have to fill in the gap in value between the holy animal and the new animal. So based on that Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish have the following discussion. Back in the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Yatza Lechulin Dvar Torah, V'tzarech Lasos Lo Damim Midivrayam. Says Rabbi Yochanan, when you deconsecrate this holy animal which had a blemish, it becomes deconsecrated Midoraisa, that's biblical in nature. And you have to fill in the value to make up for the change in value only as a rabbinic mandate. Only midivrehem, that's only a requirement of the rabbis. The Reish Lakish Amar, Af tzarech lasos lo damim min haTorah. Reish Lakish disagrees with the Rabbi Yochanan, and he says you have to fill in the gap in value even on a biblical level. That's something that's biblically required. So based on this discussion of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and based on the previous discussion that we had of Rabbi Yonah and Rabbi Yirmiyah, both reporting in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, whether consecrated property is subject to the laws of overcharging by more than a sixth or not, the Gemara is going to pose some questions. B'maya skinan, asks Gemara, what's the case, what are we dealing with when you have this animal which was holy, which you're deconsecrating? Ilema bichtei ona, if you're deconsecrating the animal and replacing it with a different animal, which let's say is roughly a sixth less in value than the holy animal, would Reish Lakish really say that in such a case where the difference in value between the animals is only a sixth, that you have to fill in the gap in value from a biblical commandment, even midoraisa? How could that possibly be? But we said explicitly in the Mishnah that we just saw in yesterday's daf that hakarkos v'ha'avadim v'ashtaros v'ha'ekdeishos, that the following items do not have ona, and those items included land and slaves and documents and hekdeshos. So it was explicit in the Mishnah that consecrated property is not subject to overcharging by more than a sixth. And therefore, how could Reish Lakish say that on a biblical level, you're required to fill in the gap in value of the two animals if that gap is exactly a sixth? And based on the Mishnah, consecrated property should not be subject to the laws of a sixth. It says Gemara, Ella bitomekach. The case that we're dealing with, where you're deconsecrating one animal onto another, must be a case where the difference in value between the two animals is more than a sixth. It would be subject to the normal laws of bitomekach, of the transaction becoming null and void, because you overcharged by more than a sixth. Well, if that's the case, if we're dealing with a difference in value of more than a sixth, then behal lema Rabbi Yochanan sarach lasos lo damim midivrayim. In such a case, could Rabbi Yochanan possibly say that on a biblical level you're required to, on a rabbinic level you're required to fill in the gap between the animals? V'ha'amar Rabbi Yonah ahekdeshos, v'Rabbi Yirmiyah amar akarkos, v'tarvayu mishmeid Rabbi Yochanan amri ona ein lahem bitul mekach yesh lahem. We just said that Rabbi Yonah reported that Rabbi Yochanan was speaking about consecrated property. Rabbi Yirmiyah reported that Rabbi Yochanan was speaking about land, but they both reported in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that their respective items are not subject to overcharging by exactly a sixth, but they are subject to overcharging by more than a sixth. So why would Rabbi Yochanan say that you only have to fill in the value between the animals of more than a sixth on a rabbinic level? According to Rabbi Yonah, that should be required even on a biblical level, because Rabbi Yonah reported that according to Rabbi Yochanan, consecrated property is subject to bitomekach. It is subject to overcharging by more than a sixth. So regardless of how we slice this Mishnah, we can't really understand the statements made. If it's talking about exactly a sixth, Rabbi Reish Lakish doesn't seem to make sense. And if it's talking about more than a sixth, then Rabbi Yochanan doesn't make sense. So says the Gemara, Le'olam bebitul mekach, really we're dealing with a case where you overcharged by more than a sixth. And even though we had a contradiction in the two statements of Rabbi Yochanan, we have to flip the statements of Rabbi Yochanan. Ve'epuch the Rabbi Yochanan, the Reish Lakish, u'de Reish Lakish, the Rabbi Yochanan. According to make everything make sense, according to Rabbi Yonah, we have to flip Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Then now Rabbi Yochanan's the one who's going to say that there's a biblical problem with the overcharging, the difference in value between the two animals, and you have to fill in the value. And Reish Lakish will say that you only have to fill in the value on a rabbinic level. And that makes everything work out according to Rabbi Yonah. Again, Rabbi Yonah originally said that according to Rabbi Yochanan, consecrated property is subject to the nullification of the transaction when you overcharge by more than a sixth. But the Mishnah had indicated, according to Rabbi Yochanan, you'd only have to fill in the value on a rabbinic level, not on a biblical level. So we flip Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish to say that Rabbi Yochanan requires filling in the value on a biblical level as well, and that would be consistent with how Rabbi Yonah understood Rabbi Yochanan originally. Now Rashi points out, according to Rabbi Yirmiyah, you don't have to flip the positions of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, but according to Rabbi Yonah, we would have to flip them in order to make everything work out. And says Rashi, that's exactly the discussion that appears in Maseches Tmura, in the tractate where this Mishnah originally appears. So now that we've flipped Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan's the one who says you have to fill in the value midoraisa. But Reish Lakish holds you only have to fill in the value of midrabanan. So ask the Gemara, b'mai kamiflagi, what's that argument about? That argument is about the law of Shmuel, b'dishmuel, de'amar Shmuel, hektishavamana, shechilalo ashavapruta, mechulal. The statement we had seen from Shmuel before is that if you have consecrated property, which is worth a larger amount, which you redeem onto something which is worth far less, then we do assume that that item has become redeemed. So Mar Islay de Shmuel, Umar Laislay de Shmuel. One position, I believe it's Rabbi Yochanan, is going to hold that we do have this statement of Shmuel. Probably should be the opposite, actually. That if you assume the transaction is not null and void, which would be like this new statement of Reish Lakish, where only on a rabbinic level you have to fill in the value of the item, he's going to be assuming, like Shmuel, that when you redeem an item of higher value onto an item of lesser value, that redemption is valid, and you would only have to fill in the gap in value on a rabbinic level. So that would be the new statement of Reish Lakish now that we flipped it. And Rabbi Yochanan is going to require that on a biblical level, you have to fill in the gap in value. He does not hold of Shmuel. He does not hold that you can redeem an item of higher value onto an item of lesser value. And that would be their debate. Alternatively, we can say that Dekule Alma Islehu Dishmuel, both Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish hold of the statement of Shmuel that you can redeem something of higher value onto something of lesser value. But the question is just how ideally you can do that. How lecharchila is that? V'hacha b'hacha miflegi mar savar shechilalo in lecharchila lo umar savar afilu lecharchila. The debate is whether Shmuel said his statement lecharchila. One shita is going to be medayik, that Shmuel said you can do this, it's only if you did it after the fact, right? If we look at how Shmuel's statement was stated, he said, hektish shavamana shechilalo, you had consecrated value, which is worth a higher amount, that you already redeemed. So Shmuel's statement only applies if you already redeemed it, but you should not do it on a lechachila level. And that would be the new statement of Rabbi Yochanan, who thinks, again, we're still working with the flipped positions of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So Rabbi Yochanan, who thinks you would have to fill in the value of the different animals on a biblical level, would say that Shmuel's statement that you could redeem such an item is only after the fact, only if you already did it, but you should not do it lechachila. And Reish Lakish, who assumes that you only have to fill in the value on a rabbinic level, would assume that Shmuel's statement would apply even lechachila. Even from the get-go, you're allowed to redeem a higher value animal or a higher value consecrated item onto something of lesser value. That's potentially a second way to understand the debate between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Now, Iba Yisema, another possibility, says Gemara, is the Olam Bichtei Ona. Again, when we first quoted the discussion of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, we weren't sure if that discussion was talking about a difference in value between the two animals of exactly a sixth or more than a sixth. So we had rejected the possibility that it was exactly a sixth, because then we couldn't understand how Reish Lakish would say that on a biblical level, you're required to fill in the gap in value. After all, the Mishnah said that consecrated property is not subject to overcharging. So we had rejected that possibility, but now the Gemara reinstates that possibility and says the Gemara, maybe really we're talking about a difference in value again, between the consecrated animal and the animal which is not yet consecrated, of exactly a sixth. Velo tepuch, we don't have to flip the positions of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish to understand, to reconcile Rabbi Yonah's statement from before. And this debate between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is about the following statement of Rav Chista. De Amar, who had said, Rav Chista had said, that my ein lahem ona, what did the Mishnah mean when it said that by consecrated property, there's no law of overcharging by exactly a sixth? What that means is einon betoras ona. That means that they're completely not subject to the laws of overcharging. The afilu pachos michdeona choser. Where even if you were to overcharge less than a sixth, less than that key ratio of overcharging, still the entire transaction would be null and void. So now we cannot flip Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan could say you only have to fill in the value on a rabbinic level, and Reish Lakish would say you have to fill in the value on a biblical level. And that debate is about Rav Chista, whether when we say that consecrated property is not subject to Onah, we mean that it's completely not subject to the laws of overcharging, and even if you charge less than a sixth extra, still the transaction would be null and void. Reish Lakish, who requires filling in the value on a biblical level, does assume of this position of Rav Chista that even less than the key ratio of a sixth, the whole transaction would become null and void, and that's why you'd have to fill in the gap in value even on a biblical level. But Rabbi Yochanan would not hold of this statement of Rav Chista, and that's why he would only require filling in the value on a rabbinic level, but not on a biblical level. So that's a potentially a third possible way of understanding the debate between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Now the Gemara sees a problem with that understanding of the debate between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Says the Gemara Meisavei, we have a question. Because we have a brisa which teaches us that ribis ve'onah lehedyot, we assume that in interpersonal transactions, you do have restrictions of overcharging or of charging interest, but ve'ein ribis ve'onah lehekdish. But there are no laws of overcharging or of interest when it comes to dealing with consecrated property. So how could we say that there's this statement of Rav Chista that consecrated property is not subject to the laws of overcharging, and even less than a sixth, the whole transaction will be null and void? The Braisa says clearly that consecrated property is not subject to the laws of overcharging. And that would seemingly mean that if you overcharge by less than a sixth, that the transaction is valid, that it does stand. So we can't really understand Reish Lakish as fitting with Rav Chista, that even less than a sixth, the transaction is null and void, if this Braisa indicates clearly that consecrated property is not subject to overcharging. He says, Gemara, that's not a good question at all. Is this Braisa that you're quoting any better than the Mishnah, which we've previously established based on the statement of Rav Chista, as saying that consecrated property is not subject to the laws of Onah at all? It's not subject to the laws of overcharging by a sixth, not more than a sixth, not less than a sixth, and not exactly a sixth. We said that it's completely not subject to these laws of Onah, and thus, even less than a sixth, the entire transaction will be null and void. And the same thing is going to be true when it comes to this Braisa, which you're quoting. I'll just establish it as saying that consecrated property is not subject to Onah, to overcharging at all. And it perfectly fits with Rav Chista. So that's the way we'll understand it. Hachanami ribis v'din Onah lehedyot, v'in ribis v'din Onah lehekdish. We'll say that what this Braisa means is that interpersonal transactions are subject to overcharging and to interest, but consecrated property is not subject to overcharging nor to interest. So ask Gemara, Ihachi, if that's the way you're going to understand the Braisa, then hainu dikani seifa zech omer behedyot mi behekdish? If that's the way you're understanding the Braisa, then how can you explain the last line in the Braisa, which says that the fact that interpersonal transactions are subject to interest and to overcharging, but consecrated property transactions are not subject to those laws, the Braisa says that that's a stringency when it comes to interpersonal transactions over consecrated property transactions. But if you're understanding that consecrated property is completely not subject to overcharging, and even less than a sixth, the whole transaction would be null and void, then how is that a stringency by interpersonal transactions? That seems to be a stringency of consecrated property. So how could we possibly understand the continuation of the Braisa if we're saying that when the Braisa says there's no overcharging for consecrated property, it means that even less than a sixth, the whole transaction is null and void. So says the Gemara, you're right. That's actually a good question. I don't know how to explain the continuation of the Meisave of the Braisa, but the answer is that it would be a ribis. When we say that there's this stringency of normal transactions over consecrated property transactions, that was only referring to interest. It was only referring to part of the beginning of the Braisa, but it was not referring to overcharging. By overcharging, there would actually be a stringency of consecrated property over interpersonal transactions. So says the Gemara, well then, litni nami zech omer behekdesh mi behedjot auna. If we're going to list that interpersonal transactions have a stringency over consecrated property by interest, then we should also teach that consecrated property has a stringency over interpersonal transactions when it comes to overcharging. So says the Gemara, no, don't ask me why I didn't teach the stringency of consecrated property, because hachi hashta, they're not comparable at all. It makes sense to teach that charging interest is a stringency which exists by interpersonal transactions over consecrated property, because that's the only stringency that exists by interpersonal transactions when compared to consecrated property. But if we were going to teach that there's a stringency of overcharging when it comes to consecrated property over interpersonal transactions, well, that's not the only stringency. There's so many others that we could teach, so we're not going to single out the stringency of overcharging by consecrated property when there's so many other stringencies that we could mention. So we just won't list any of them. So the Gemara thus says that this understanding of the Braisa, that when it says that there's no law of overcharging by consecrated property, it means that even less than a sixth, the whole transaction will be null and void, that is in fact a proper understanding of the Braisa, at least a proper potential understanding of the Braisa, and thus the debate between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish really could be about this statement of Rav Chisda, whether consecrated property is fully not subject to Ona, and even less than a sixth, the whole transaction is null and void. According to Reish Lakish, yes. According to Rabbi Yochanan, no. So says the Gemara, well now, by the by, we've mentioned this Braisa, we've mentioned this Meisave, which discussed interest and overcharging by both interpersonal transactions and consecrated property. So ask the Gemara, ribis dehekdish hechidami. What's the case of interest when it comes to consecrated property? If the case is that the treasurer of the consecrated property lent you money for $100 and asked you to pay back $120, which would be charging interest, when the treasurer gave you the funds of Hekdesh, he has misappropriated the funds of Hekdesh. He's used them in a way that he was not entitled to do. And since the treasurer has misappropriated the funds of Hekdesh, they've become completely deconsecrated, and they become fully the treasurer's. Once you deviate in the use of the funds of Hekdesh, they become like the funds of the treasurer. And this would no longer really be a case of ribis, of charging interest with Hekdesh property, because you're not dealing with Hekdesh property anymore. As soon as the treasurer misuses them, they become his own property, and thus it's just like any case of an interpersonal transaction where a person is using money and charging interest. So that case, if it's that the treasurer is lending money of Hekdesh, that wouldn't really seem to fit. So Amar Rav Hoshea, says Rav Hoshea, the case of charging interest by consecrated property must be hacha b'mayaskinan. The case that we're dealing with must be kagon shekiba alav v'sapek silto me'arba ve'amdu m'shalosh. The case must be that a person accepted upon himself to provide flour for the Beis HaMikdash to be used in the bread offerings in the Beis HaMikdash, and he must have accepted to do that when you could buy a certain quantity of flour. You could buy 4 sa'a for a sela, for a specific unit of currency, and then the flour is increased in price, and now you can only buy or provide 3 sa'a of flour for that same price. Kedetanya, as the Braisa teaches us, that Hamakaba alav asapik silto me'arba ve'amdu m'shalosh, let's say a person accepts upon himself to provide flowers for the Beis HaMikdash at a price of 4 sa'a per sela, but then the flour increases in price and you can only afford 3 sa'a for a sela, still you have to be misapek me'arba. You still have to provide flour essentially at a rate of 4 sa' per sella, which is going to mean since the price increased, you'll just have to make up the extra flour that you promised from your own funds. That let's say you promised $100 and you were going to use that to buy 4 sa' of flour, but now you can only provide 3 sa' at that price, then the extra third, which you owe, you're going to have to take from your own funds. So that would essentially be ribis, because you're paying back hektish more than you originally accepted upon yourself to pay. But nonetheless, because we assume that consecrated property has the upper hand, we say that you're not subject to interest. It's not subject to overpaying or to paying interest, to paying back more than you're borrowing, so to speak, when you pay back this extra value to hektish. And that would be the case of interest when it comes to hektish. Now, the reverse case is also true, though, says the Braisa. Mishalosh ba'amdu ma'arpa, if you accepted to pay flour at a price of 3 sa' per sella, but then the price of flour decreases and you can now afford 4 sa' of flour for that same amount of money, still misapik ma'arpa, you have to pay that additional volume of flour, shiyad hektish al ha'aliyona. Because as we said, consecrated property always has the upper hand. You always have to pay the higher quantity of flour, or the higher quantity of whatever you commit to pay to hektish. So that would be the case of hektish, of consecrated property, not being subject to interest. You could actually pay back more than you committed to give to the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Papa Amar, Rav Papa says an alternate way to understand the case of interest by hektish is that hacha ba'avnei binyan ha'misuros degizbar askinan kiddush mu'al, that we're dealing with a case of stones which would be used for building in the Beis HaMikdash, which belong to the treasurer of consecrated property. Kiddush mu'al de'amar Shmuel bonin b'chol ve'achar kach makdishin. Like the statement of Shmuel, where Shmuel says that what they used to do when they were building in the Beis HaMikdash is they would first build whatever structures they needed to build in Yerushalayim in the Beis HaMikdash, and only then they would consecrate the stones. So essentially what Rav Papa is doing is he's returning to the original understanding that the case of interest is where the treasurer lends you money for, let's say, $100, and you pay him back $120, which would be interest. But we don't have the original problem that the Gemara had mentioned. The original problem the Gemara had mentioned is as soon as the treasurer misappropriates the funds of hektish, they become deconsecrated, and thus you're no longer dealing with holy property. So Rav Papa changes the case that we're not dealing with coins anymore, but we're actually dealing with stones. If we're dealing with the stones of the Beis HaMikdash, they're not going to be subject to the misappropriation of hektish, because they don't start as consecrated property. They only become consecrated once you build them into the structures of Yerushalayim. And invariably, what that does is that gives us a perfect item, which technically is considered consecrated property, which technically belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, but at the same time does not automatically become deconsecrated when the treasurer misappropriates them, because they're not subject to the normal laws of Me'ilah. They're not subject to the normal laws of the misappropriation of Kodesh funds, of holy funds. So what that allows us to do is to construct a case where the treasurer actually could lend you an item of value that belongs to Hekdesh, and you could return it at a higher value, and that would be interest, but it would not violate the general laws of Me'ilah, and thus that could be the case that the Gemara was discussing when it said that hektish would not be subject to the prohibition against charging interest. That essentially concludes the Gemara's discussion about onah, about overcharging when it comes to the items in the Mishnah, and specifically when it comes to hektish. Now the Gemara moves on to discuss some of the other laws that were in the Mishnah, which one of which was, we said that all of these items, documents, and slaves, and land, and hektish would not be subject to the laws of paying back double for theft. Ein bahen mishum kefel. So ask the Gemara Minan Emili, how do I know that these items are not subject to paying back double for theft? The Tana Rabbanan, as the Braisa says, al kol devar pesha, the Torah, in describing the requirement to pay back double, refers to any item where a person is negligent, and the Gemara understand that that's a klal, that's a general term, a general phrase for any item where you have negligence. Then the Torah continues on, al shor, al chamor, al sel, al sama. The Torah singles out an ox or a donkey or a sheep or a garment, which is a prat, which are specific examples. And then al kol avida asher yomar. Then the Torah goes back and says, or any item where a person can say that this is the item. Again, any item that is general. Chazar uklal. That, again, refers to general items. So what we have now, the construct that the Torah presents, is a klal uprad uchlal. It started general, it got specific, and then it became general again. And any time we have a klal uprad uchlal, eyat adan ela ke'ein haprat. You only include examples which are similar to the specific examples that the Torah gave. Ma prab mefurash davar hametaltel v'gufo mamon. Just like the four examples the Torah gave, an ox, a donkey, a sheep, or a garment are things which are movable property, and they have inherent value. Af kol davar hametaltel v'gufo mamon. So too, any item which is movable property and which is in its essence, which has inherent value. But yatsu karko she'enan metaltelin. That excludes land, which was listed in the Mishnah as not being subject to the laws of kefel, of double payment, because they're not movable property. Land is not movable. Yatsu avadim shehukshu lekarkos. Slaves are also excluded, even though technically they are movable property, but they're compared in Torah to land, and therefore anytime, almost any time probably, that land is excluded, slaves will also be included. Yatsu shtaro shahafo pisha metaltelin ein gufon mamon. Documents are excluded, even though they are movable property, because they do not have inherent value. They only represent the value of the transaction recorded in the document. And hekdeshos amarkra re'ehu velo hekdesh. Consecrated property is also excluded because the Torah says that the laws of double payment for theft apply in transactions between one person and another, between re'ehu, between your friend, and we understand that re'ehu, between your friend, excludes consecrated property. So that's how we would know that these four categories of items are not subject to double payment, based on the klal uprad uchlal, the general and specific and general terms that the Torah uses to elaborate the laws of tashlumei kefel. Now continued the Mishnah and said that these items are also not subject to tashlume dalad vehei. They're not subject to paying back four times or five times, and that is specifically referring to a sheep or an ox which was stolen and then slaughtered or sold. So ask Gemara, how do I know that these items are not subject to four times or five times payment? My taima, because tashlume dalad vehei amar rachmana below tashlume shlosha v'arba. Because the Torah said you would have to pay back four or five times for the theft and then sale or slaughter of these items, but you would not pay three or four times. And what Rashi explains is that the double payment for theft was included in the four or five times payment of an ox or sheep which was stolen and then sold or slaughtered. And since we just excluded all of these items from the double payment, that means they have to be excluded from the four or five times payment as well. Because their four or five times payment, once you subtract the extra value for double payment, would then be only three times or four times, not four times or five times. And the Torah never required paying three times or four times. It only required paying four times or five times. Once you exclude the double value, based on the verses that we explained a second ago, once they're excluded from double payment, then they also have to be excluded from four times or five times payment. Another statement we had made in the Mishnah about these items is that shomer chinam eino nishba, that an unpaid watchman would not have to make an oath about these items. So ask Gemara minani mili, how do we know that that's true? The Tanur Rabbanan, because we have a brisa which quotes the verses describing the obligations of an unpaid watchman, where the Torah says, ki yitein ish el re'ehu, when a person gives an item to his friend to watch, that's a klal, that's a general statement. When a person gives something to his friend, then we specify the types of items, kesef o kelim, like money or like vessels, which is a prat, that's a specific example. And then there's a different girsa in the Gemara here, in the parentheses we have vigunav mi beta ish, and then the items that were being watched by the watchman were stolen from the watchman's house. But the different girsa, which probably makes more sense, is that the continuation of the pasuk in describing the obligations of an unpaid watchman says lishmor, to guard the item. So when it says to guard the item, that's very general, not specifying a specific type of item. That's chazar uklal. That's again being general. And therefore we have a klal uprad uklal, a general term followed by a specific term, followed by a general term. So again, we understand eyat adan elekein haprat. We can only understand it in light of the specific examples. Only things which are similar to the specific examples will be included or excluded from whatever laws the Torah is elucidating in the given context. So ma pram mefurash davar hametalta v'gufo mamon. Just like the items mentioned in the obligations of an unpaid watchman are things which are movable and which have inherent value, like money or like vessels, af kol davar hametaltel v'gufo mamon. So too, any item which is movable and which has inherent value. So again, we can exclude the same items as we did before. Yatsu karkos she'enan metaltelin. That excludes land, which is not movable. Yatsu avonim shehukshu lekarkos. That excludes slaves, which are compared to land. Yatsu shtaros she'afal pi shematalkalin ein gufan mamon. That excludes documents, which even though they are movable, they do not have inherent value, but only representative value. And hekdeshos amarkra re'ehu re'ehu velo shel hekdesh. Consecrated property is also excluded because, again, the Torah uses this language, that these laws apply between a person and his friend, and from there we can understand between a person and his friend and not with consecrated property. And then the Gemara just has one more quick discussion, excluding all of these items also from the obligations of a paid watchman. That no se'sachar eino mashalim. A paid watchman also would not pay for these items. How do we know that that's true? Minan imili, the Tanu Rabbanan ki tein isha re'ehu. Again, the Torah uses the language of a person giving an item to his friend when it comes to a paid watchman. So that would be general. When a person gives something to his friend, klau, chamor oshor oseh, then the Torah says a donkey or an ox or a sheep, that's a prat, that's specific, very specific items which these laws apply to. Then the Torah goes back and says, v'chol behema lishmor, any type of animal that a person would guard, that's chazar uklal, that's again general language. So klal uprat uklal, we have this construct of general followed by specific followed by general, e'ata dan elakeina prat, and therefore we can only include items which are similar to the specific examples, ma'apra mefurash davar metalta v'gufa mamon, just like the specific examples are things which are movable and which have inherent value, af kol davar metalta v'gufa mamon. So too, any item which is movable and which has inherent value would be included in the laws of a paid watchman. Yatsu karko she'ein an metaltalin, that again excludes land, which is not movable property. Yatsu avadim shehukshu lekarkos, that again excludes slaves, which are compared to land. Yatsu shtaro she'afa pish metaltalin ein gufan mamon, that also excludes documents, which even though they are movable, do not have inherent value, only representative value. And hekdeshos, that also excludes consecrated property, because again, amar kra re'ehu re'ehu velo shel hekdesh, that these laws apply specifically between a person and his fellow Jew, but they do not apply with consecrated property. So that's how we know that all of these items are excluded from the various dinim, the various laws explained in the Mishnah. Okay, I think we'll hold it over there. Yashu koyach, and a good void.